Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And good evening. I'm Michael Cohen. The evening before Thanksgiving here in Lansing, about 6:09 just turned. About 1.3 million Michiganders on the roads this Thanksgiving. So hopefully, if you are on the road, you are driving carefully. On today's program, it looks like Detroit is about to get an emergency financial manager. But why can't city officials and the unions figure things out on their own? I'll ask an economist that has been tracking this situation and some advice for tomorrow's Thanksgiving meal from a doctor who says there are really effective ways to avoid gorging yourself. She'll tell us exactly what they are. But first, the Congressional Super Committee in Washington, unable to come to an agreement on the deficit reduction deal. The committee formed to find a way to trim $1.2 billion from the deficit in 10 years. And their failure now means that automatic cuts will take place in January of 2013. To find out why lawmakers just can't seem to find a middle ground and what these automatic cuts will mean to Americans, I'm joined by U.S. Congressman from Michigan's 11th District, Thaddeus McCotter. Thaddeus, thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
Now, I'm guessing for tomorrow you've got a turkey and family planned?
Well, I know that the Lions are playing the Packers. Go Lions.
I see. Are you going to be at the game yourself? Or?
No. I'll be home. We're going to have her family's coming over.
I see. So I guess you get to watch it like so many of us. Now, let's talk about this situation with the Super Committee. I mean, this $1.2 billion in cuts over 10 years, I mean, that doesn't sound like an insurmountable mission. From what you know, where did the committee get stuck?
I think the committee got stuck on the issue of taxes. Obviously, the House Republicans on the committee, my colleagues from Michigan, Fred Upton and Dave Camp, as well as our colleague Jeff Henseling from Texas, share the vast majority of our conference's opposition to raising taxes. And I think that's where it bogged down. Now, the committee may not have worked out its differences and come up with a resolution, but the committee was always a task force that had to report back to the entire Congress. So the Congress will have to deal with this. And there's still a chance that the sequestration will not take effect if Congress can act.
Now, if the committee can't come to an agreement, what's the likelihood that Congress can do that on their own terms?
Well, the concern has always been with the sequestration. Obviously, Republicans like myself are very worried about the military and particularly taking a disproportionate share of the cuts. And the Democrats are worried about some of the social spending that's in there that'll be sequestered. So the pressure comes from, do you want to try to avoid the sequestration cuts and come up with your own? And I think that clock will continue to tick, and we'll continue to see action within both the House and Senate to try to meet the $1.2 trillion over 10 years without having to go into sequestration.
One report said that Republicans in the Super Committee negotiations insisted that the Bush tax cuts would be continued beyond 2012, all of the Bush tax cuts. Democrats, including President Obama, want to extend the Bush tax cuts only to individuals making less than $200,000. Is this ultimately one of the key factors that led to the failure of a deal?
Oh, yes. Clearly, the Democrats want to raise taxes, and they want to continue to try to have government grow us out of this hole we're in economically. Ironically, we saw the CBO put out a report today saying that the first stimulus was going to have a detrimental effect on the economy in the long run. And so to continue that type of policies, Republicans ran against that in 2010, and we were elected not to try to continue to beat our heads against the wall of bigger government, but to actually try to find entitlement reform that can put us on the path to fiscal sanity and to avoid taking any more precious capital out of the private sector so that workers and entrepreneurs can grow the economy.
Now, most Americans obviously don't want to pay more taxes, but do you think they really agree with this no more taxes at all costs philosophy?
Well, what happens historically, and the reason that we're having this conversation about the Super Committee and about the fiscal hole we're in, is that every time somebody says you have to raise taxes to provide fiscal sanity in Washington, they wind up blowing through it, spending it, and you wind up worse off than where you started, and the economy's private capital is diminished. And I don't see why that's going to change. It's historic.
Now, these automatic cuts, they've been described as, I guess, devastating. How deep are they going to be, and how significant will they be, and how will Americans feel their impact?
Well, I think that that's the reason that the legislative process will still continue. There are going to be very serious cuts. $1.2 trillion over 10 years, it's obviously not all that is necessary, clearly, to get us on the path to fiscal discipline and sanity. But yeah, it's going to be something that I think, as you rightly point out, the concern of the automatic cuts is what could bring Congress together to find ways to address that $1.2 trillion without actually having to go into sequestration.
I'm talking to U.S. Congressman from Michigan's 11th District, Thaddeus McCotter. I wonder now, is this really, when you look at the big picture, potentially just the tip of a frightening iceberg? Are the cuts that we're now considering to the budget just the first clippings of some much bigger cutbacks to federal programs that we'll see in the near future?
Well, we saw where Moody's talked about, I think it was $4 trillion. That they thought was necessary, and that was one of the reasons I believe they gave them their downgrade of the U.S. even after a bipartisan deal was reached on the debt ceiling. And everybody knows that serious entitlement reform has to happen. And I think that both parties unfortunately find themselves in a position where the Congress is split between the Senate and the House being in different hands, as well as heading into a presidential election. It makes it very difficult for Congress and the president to get together to wind up coming up with a plan that will start really addressing the fundamental reforms of the government that are necessary, not merely cutting, but restructuring it for the 21st century.
It's interesting that the taxes is really the key point of discussion. You probably know CBS 60 Minutes had a piece this past Sunday about Americans for Tax Reform and their taxpayer protection pledge. And it basically highlighted Grover Norquist, basically saying that he was one of the most powerful men in Washington with his pledge and the fact that hundreds of lawmakers have signed the pledge. I think you yourself also did sign the pledge, right?
Yeah, but to me it's a reflection of something I've done since I was a community college trustee. I've always run against higher taxes and opposed raising them. So to me, it's what I talk to my constituents about, and it's what they entrust me to do when they elect me to office.
Although the piece talked about the group's ability to then hold lawmakers accountable and even challenge them with financial help during their upcoming elections. I mean, do you view that as a potential problem when it comes to trying to compromise, and then there's this pledge and a group that's essentially, I could almost say, coercing lawmakers not to compromise on the tax issue?
Oh, not for me. To me, it's something, again, I've always opposed, higher taxes, and the people who hold you accountable are your constituents. So to say that ATR, somehow Grover Norquist, is some master Svengali of protecting people from higher taxes, first, I think he would not blanch it, accepting the credit for that. But number two, I think it's just how the media works. I'm waiting for 60 Minutes' piece on the people demanding the higher taxes be redistributed to them and their influence on the Democratic Party.
I guess the only sticking point is that the nature of this legislative work is it's compromise, is it not? I mean, you come in with an idea, but you may not get it in full. Even on the tax issue, isn't there a point where there needs to be some give on that issue?
No, I think that's non-negotiable from our Republican point of view. Look, you can't prop up big government in the 21st century. Again, the CBO said the stimulus is going to have a detrimental impact on the economy in the long run. We're already looking at the fact that we have a 20th century model of government in the 21st century. And if you continue to give government money as if everything it does is wonderful, as if everything it does can be sustained, you've locked yourself into structural deficits that'll be masked by the short-term revenue. And eventually you'll have a downturn even more so in the economy, and revenues will fall because of the higher taxes, and you'll be worse off than you are today. So to me, compromise is always something that should be sought, but you should never compromise the ability of the American people to pursue their prosperity in a growing economy.
About a minute and a half left. I want to ask you about this Occupy movement. Is it a topic of discussion among you and your colleagues? How do you view the movement, and do you consider it a serious one?
Well, I think it's an amalgamation. It's largely from the left, which I think you also have some extreme libertarians in it, and I think that anytime you have people expressing their views on a public issue, you take notice of it. I think my colleagues have. And so to me, it's a right. They have a right to petition government for the redress of grievances and peacefully assemble to do it, as long as they follow the laws of the land. God bless them. That's their right.
I mean, when they say that the top 1% has too much money and they're leaving the other 99% with breadcrumbs, are they right?
Well, I don't think so. As one of the 99%, I don't agree with that. I don't think redistribution of wealth is going to make anybody more prosperous, because it's just going to put us in a cycle of downward economic spiral and shorten revenues. We'll wind up like Greece with higher debts and deficits. So I don't think that that's the solution, but they have every right to express their opinion.
Thaddeus McCotter, U.S. Congressman from Michigan's 11th District, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.